The Love Good podcast is brought to you by our patrons. On top of being a media discovery platform and crowdfunding initiative, we are a grassroots movement that accompanies young people and artists who are transforming culture with beauty. Our patrons are on the front lines of discovering the world's best new music, books, and art before anyone else. Build the culture you've always imagined. Join the movement and become a patron today at lovegoodculture.com.
Welcome, everybody, to the Love Good podcast. This is your host, Jimmy Mitchell. This is episode 7, season 1. We're so happy to have you listening, as always. Very Merry Christmas to you and your beautiful families out there. It is such a joy to be celebrating this time of the year, what it really means to be human, coming together to really even pierce the mystery, right, of a God who becomes man. This is the one time of the year that everybody can just stand in awe of that thin veil that separates heaven and earth. And this is going to be a really special episode. And in fact, this is our last episode until 2018. We're going to take a couple of weeks off for Christmas and New Year's. And this is actually one of my favorite interviews we've done yet. In just a few moments, we're going to have Chris Allen in the studio. He won American Idol only 2 seasons ago. This guy has got a heart of gold. You can see it. He's just humble, but he's so talented and he's so good. And we talk a lot about this via media, this standing along the middle way. You know, he's this deeply faithful guy and obviously incredibly talented, but he defies genres. It's almost like he doesn't necessarily fit into any of the industry norms and standards. And so he is paving a way, blazing a trail, and really just doing beautiful things. In fact, we've got a brand new Christmas album out to our patrons. Especially our higher level patrons are enjoying his vinyl right now. About a year ago, we put out his newest Christmas album to all of our patrons. And so many of you know who this guy is. You've been enjoying his holiday music, especially, just like I have been. And it's a real beautiful conversation that you guys can get to listen to in just a few moments. Beforehand, as always, I'll be sitting down with Janaea Trudell to just unpack a little bit more about our movement, and especially this time of the year, what the incarnation has to do with it, what God coming to be with us at Christmas is really all about, and how that has an impact on our lives, but also on culture at large. So I cannot wait for you guys to enjoy this show. Coming up next is a song off of a beautiful album called O Come, Let Us Adore, a Christmas collective. This was produced by a good friend of mine, Sean Williams, in 2014. The song is by Kevin Hyder. I think you're going to recognize it.
Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh, o'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. The bells on bobtail ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight. Oh, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Love Good podcast. This is your host, Jimmy Mitchell. I'm sitting down, as always, with Janaea Trudell.
Hello again. Good to be back.
Gosh, it's always good to have you back, Janaea. I mean, we are only, depending on when people are listening to this, a few days away from Christmas. I'm actually primarily curious right now, what are the massive traditions around your family, even back home across Saskatchewan, Canada? I don't know how far and wide the traditions are around Christmas in your country. Obviously, in America, Christmas is in the air. Mm-hmm. We're all obsessed for all kinds of different reasons, for better or for worse. But I'm curious, what is this time of the year like back home?
It's probably pretty similar. Growing up on the farm, we just end up having every year both sides of the family over. So tons of people, lots of food, and hours and hours and hours of playing music together. I think that's the biggest tradition probably. We're away from the bustle. Like, Christmas for me has never been quite the stress and the lights and everything that it can sometimes be in the city. So I'm thankful for that, but it is really fun to be in Nashville while Christmas is coming. It's been really exciting. But it's pretty quiet, and I love it.
Yeah, you're immediately reminding me of something Michael Smallbone said on the podcast about a month ago, that we must ruthlessly eliminate hurry out of our lives. And that was long before the Christmas craze was upon us, and I think there's so much wisdom in that. So I'm guessing small-town Canada allows for a certain degree of silence, or at least stillness and family and simplicity that I don't know I've ever really experienced around Christmas. It always just feels kind of crazy. And this is a little bit early in the show to be giving a media recommendation, but I just saw last weekend with my mom a film that completely blew me away called The Man Who Invented Christmas. And it's all about the, you know, the story that Charles Dickens wrote kind of in a fury. I mean, he had become a runaway bestseller with Oliver Twist back in the 19th century. He'd gone on these American tours where he was celebrated practically as a war hero. And he just like couldn't write another book after that. He had three books that completely flopped. His publishers were about to drop him, and then they took this huge risk on A Christmas Carol, which of course became one of his most well-known works. And there's this point where an Irish orphan who has become a bit of a housekeeper and a nanny for Charles Dickens' kids, she's telling this ghost story. And this is what stirs his imagination and leads to him writing A Christmas Carol. But she talks about how on Christmas Eve, the veil between heaven and earth gets very, very thin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even long before I really understood what Christmas was all about, I must say my imagination was just seized every year by the magic, the wonder, really the miracle of Christmas. So at the very least, we just want to wish everybody the happiest of days with their families. And don't forget, like, it really is 12 days of Christmas, like a very full 8-day octave where, like, literally for most of the last 2,000 years, the church has celebrated Christmas for every single day for 8 days. So just feast on and then feast on some more, you know? But it's particularly exciting because later in the show today, we have an artist coming on. He's the winner of American Idol season, I don't remember what, but 2 years ago. He's just got a childlike spirit. Just blew me away with his humility, his kindness. He's also put out one of the best Christmas records I've heard in years. And one of the things we talk a lot about with Chris Allen is what he calls, or what I ended up calling, the via media. Mm-hmm. And I think this is really cool. You know, part of the reason Love Good exists is, initially in high school, I kind of grew frustrated and dismayed by a lot of mainstream media. And I thought, there's got to be more than this. And then I started to poke my head around Christian media, really fell in love with a lot of Christian music. And then I went off to Nashville, where the whole industry is headquartered. And I started to discover a lot of these really cool indie artists and singer-songwriters. And I just realized increasingly that actually artists like Chris Allen, like Dave Barnes, who I met in college, Matt Wirtz, Ben Rector, Drew Holcomb, so many of the artists that we work with, they stand in the middle, or as Chris Allen puts it, they ride the line. And I'm just, you know, increasingly mesmerized by artists who have deeply rooted faith and yet are completely themselves. They're not trying to force anything into any genre or market, and often have a far larger and wider impact in the end.
Yeah, I think that's so beautiful. And even is something that I started feeling as an artist growing up and feeling like, oh, I could probably do music, like, if I wanted to when I'm older. And just feeling this potential and really, like, a call and a desire to be in the marketplace. Like, that's where my heart was. It was like in the slums of the world, and not, you know, like in the streets of people's hearts, where, like, where the poverty is of love and beauty, and story and relationship. Like, I have a friend who's been to India and speaks about, I remember reading Mother Teresa saying similar things about the poverty of the Western world. And how it's not material. The very poverty is that we think that we have everything, and we think that we're all set. And there's this really deep poverty of love and beauty and relationship, and we're kind of isolated. And my friend, I remember her saying things like, "I encounter the deepest physical poverty that probably exists on Earth every day, and it's nothing compared to the poverty of that I know in North America." Wow. And it's not like a hopeless case. I don't say that like grimly, but the people who are, using their gifts in that way of literally like laying their life, like the scripture, like you lay your life down for a friend, that is love. They, like these artists literally lay their, like their bodies down as a bridge between like, between heaven and earth, and they become that thin place where, mystery is like encapsulated in them, and they go like a little drop of rain into like the drought of the heart of the culture, which is actually a lot happening and like not a lot happening at the same time. Like yeah. There's an emptiness there. And so they're like warriors. They're so brave and so genuine. And they have the sensitivity of an artist and a creator and a co-creator, and this, like the strength of a martyr and the bravery of like a soldier, because you're going into places where, even if you don't go yourself, like your music is reaching, places where, yeah, there's a poverty of love and beauty, and story and truth. So it's just so, so beautiful and so like noble to me that there's people out there, and it's inspiring to me personally, like as an artist. I want that for the world first, and then I would love that to be the case with my own little offering. So
it's awesome. Mm-hmm. We've just re-released the Love Good story, and I think it captures a little bit of this via media, mm-hmm. and this tension for an artist who's got to both be a warrior and an artist and a martyr at the same time. I mean, that's the thing. You make real sacrifices by being authentic. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't ever advance your career quite as quickly when you remain true to yourself. Mm-hmm. And this is something to be super weary of in the music that we listen to, the books that we read, certainly the kind of films that we go to see is what's popular always the most artful, mm-hmm. And the most true and the most beautiful and the thing that's going to most predispose us to a life of goodness? And the answer is obviously no. So here, this is a quick excerpt from the Love Good story. If you haven't read this yet, you got to check it out, lovegoodstory.com/story. Good media awakens us with hope and wonder. It elevates our desires for the highest good. Sadly, our options today are limited. One, consume shallow entertainment that leaves you feeling depressed. Or two, settle for cliche alternatives that leave us wanting more. I mean, that was exactly my experience. So much of what I listened to in high school, and it wasn't bad. It was a lot of top 40 stuff. And even in middle school, I was all about oldies and classic rock. And a lot of that's obviously like pretty decent and wholesome. And yet it left me feeling a bit empty at times. You know, it wasn't enough to just keep waking up to Star 94 in Atlanta, Georgia. Mm-hmm. I wanted more. And I think Christian media satisfied a desire there for a while. I got real into a lot of the Christian artists that I later met in college, and they're amazing people. But you know, on the whole, so often you don't necessarily see an artistry there or an artfulness there. You know, there's so many brilliant exceptions to this, but mm-hmm. as soon as you have an industry, you have commerce, mm-hmm. and that means, you know, art is compromised. Mm-hmm. It's so difficult to avoid at the very least. And so a lot of those cliche alternatives left me just wanting more. And so it's why it remains such a privilege to be in friendship with artists like you, Janaea, to get to have people like Chris Allen coming in. I mean, we had no business interviewing him, but this guy was so gracious and so kind and so humble. I mean, he just blew me away. So it's going to be really fun to have him on here in a few minutes. As always, it's a blast to get to catch up with you beforehand. And Merry Christmas to you and yours. You leave today, don't you?
I do. I'm so excited. Yeah.
Is it going to be absolutely blizzardy, snowy, crazy cold? What's it going to be?
Oh,
like?
Yeah. Like, it'll be awkward that I don't have winter boots when I got off the plane.
Oh, man.
But I'll survive.
Oh, man.
I'm excited. Yeah. But it's been nice. The weather's been a treat. But I'm ready to be knee-deep in snow.
Yeah. Well, Merry Christmas to all the Trudells. I wish I was going to get to experience some of your live music this year. And we'll see you in 2018.
Yes. Merry Christmas.
I said there's something about Christmas morning. Santa Claus had left.
And why Dad would wake up with cookie crumbs on his chest. Yeah, there's something. Christmas morning, I said there's something, yeah, about Christmas morning.
You're listening to Something About Christmas Morning off of the brand new Christmas album by Chris Allen. This guy has been all over the world, and more recently on a Christmas tour that is about to land in Nashville, actually tonight when this podcast releases. And it's a joy to have you in the studio today, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about your upbringing. You know, obviously, most people at this point would know you for having won American Idol
right.
a couple years ago. A lot
right.
of our patrons would know you because of the Christmas album that we released, that you released, and that we were able to get to them about
yeah.
a year ago, and everybody has just loved it. And even in the last 15 minutes of catching up, I can even just see it in your eyes. There's a lot of goodness in you, and you know, living in this great town of Nashville,
mm-hmm.
having come from Arkansas, life has definitely been an adventure for you, it sounds like.
Yeah, I was actually talking to I'm building something at my house, and I'm using a builder, and I was talking to him. I was like, I feel like we're talking about moving, and I was like, I think I've moved to different, like four or five different cities in the past 8 or 9 years. Like, it's just been, it's been a lot. It's been a good a lot, though, you know. As far as upbringing, like growing up in Arkansas, grew up with, I always feel like this is a, being a parent, I feel like this is a very integral part of my story. I had very young parents. My mom was 19 when I was born. My dad was 20. Like, I can't imagine having kids at that age, and they had two. And so it doesn't make any sense to me, but they did the best job that they possibly could have done and put music into my life, and also gave my my brother the kind of just willingness to and leeway to do whatever he wanted to do. And so we both have weird jobs. And my parents are incredibly proud of that. So
that's awesome. Is your brother older?
He's younger, actually. He's a year younger than me. We're 13 months apart, so we're almost Irish twins.
Yeah.
And he's a good singer as well, but he is actually an amazing gymnast. So that's what he does.
That's pretty amazing. And it sounds like you started playing music from a very young age, huh?
Yeah, music was always around the house as far as just listening to it. My dad was a singer and he played guitar and stuff. But I think my parents saw something inside of me that they wanted to cultivate, and they wanted to like feed into a little bit. And so they put me into this school that was outside of town that had an orchestra program, because they thought, man, you know, if maybe this is the way to get music introduced into his life in a big way. And so I signed up for this school and I started playing viola at 8 years old. And
wow.
It was... you know, it was one of those things where everybody in the school had to play, but I think I was one of the only ones that was like, I think I might actually like this, you know? It was, and I'm playing viola too. It's like some people don't even know what that is, but it's just a big violin, you know? And I loved it. And so I played from 8 years old to even after high school and through college a little bit.
It's amazing. I've always loved the viola. It has all the ease of transport that the violin offers.
Yes.
But the full range of the cello.
It's a rich sound.
Yeah.
There's some great viola solos out there in rock music. I think The Who has a viola solo in one of their songs. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, I love playing the viola.
What were the next few instruments that you picked up along the way?
So guitar was always around the house. I really started playing at 13. My parents had to work and I was at home for a summer. And so me and my brother were just at home by ourselves. Which sounds crazy, by the way, but you know, it was a different time. And so they left us at the house all day. And my brother would go to the pool and I would stay at home and play guitar and learn how to play. And so after the summer was over, I remember going to my dad and being like, hey Dad, can I show you something? He's like, yeah, sure. And I pick up his guitar and I play something, and he's like, when did you learn how to do this? Like, you've just been doing this the whole summer? And I'm like, yeah. I didn't want to go to the pool. So yeah, I started playing guitar then, and kind of randomly picked up other instruments. I wouldn't say I'm good enough at anything else to say I play it really. I mean, I can play piano, but not really. Like, not as good as like piano players, quote unquote.
Yeah, especially in this town, there's a lot of competition.
Yeah,
studio pianists and otherwise. So I'm so curious, what went into your decision as a college student to pursue music full time and professionally? Because obviously, maybe in Nashville, we would expect that. You know, you got a lot of people at Belmont, people like Amy Grant going to Vanderbilt. You're just entrenched in the industry, and so the idea of dropping out to pursue a career. Makes sense. It's a little bit scary, you know, but it had to have been even scarier. You know, where were you at the time?
It was, I mean, it kind of was. It was interesting. So playing music for other people was something that happened for me really late, not including playing in orchestras, but like getting my guitar and playing songs for other people was something I started maybe at 17, maybe 18 years old. Like, I started really late doing that, and I was an incredibly shy human being. And actually the first time that I started singing for people was after my freshman year of college. I was a part of a campus ministry, and one of the leaders of that ministry was like, hey, we don't have anyone to lead worship for this mission trip that we were on. We were in Spain. And they were like, we hear you play and we hear you sing. Do you mind playing some songs and us doing worship together? And I'm like, I can, but I've never done this before. And so that was kind of the first time that I started singing. I don't even like to say that worshiping is singing for people, but in front of a crowd, that was the first time I'd ever done it. And it kind of gave me a bug, and I wanted to pursue it. So I started playing at bars and, more involved with the campus ministry as far as worship goes and being a part of the worship team. Playing on a Friday night for 4 hours for $25, that type of thing, you know, playing songs over and over and over again, hoping that no one notices. And I got the bug, and I was in college at the time, and I didn't find my purpose in life to be a student, whether that's the right thing or not. But I wasn't incredibly studious. I knew that I was competent enough to do well, but I just had other plans. You know, I had other plans in my life to play music and that to be my thing. And so I did. I dropped out of school after 3 years in, and actually started writing a bunch and made a record.
Awesome. And that first record came out in 2007, is that right?
You could, sure.
Yeah, something like that.
If it's on Wikipedia, it's probably true.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So obviously you've been in the, well, I guess even as an indie artist, you've been a part of this industry for about 10 years.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I find just so intriguing is that, you know, you're several EPs and several albums in, and then you do something really pretty exciting and maybe even a little bit risky, going and taking the stage at American Idol.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious what went into that thought process as well. It sounds like that was a bit of an opportunity for you to yet again just put yourself out there and say, all right, Lord, if this is what you want from me, I'm going to go ahead and give you every opportunity to make this a reality.
That's definitely all it was for me. I mean, I wanted to do music, and I was actually headed back to school. I had signed up. I had started going to classes and things like that, and I wasn't expecting anything to happen from the show and didn't even expect to try out, really. My brother wanted to try out. He had tried out the year before, and he's like, I want to go try out again. I'm going to drive to Louisville. Do you want to come? And I'm like, sure, I'm not doing anything this weekend, so... the greatest decision I've ever made on the fly. And so me, him, and actually a good friend of mine who still plays with me, we all went and we all tried out, and me and my brother actually made it through the first round together. We made it through a couple rounds together. And it's such an interesting thing. I mean, the rest is what it is and was recorded onto your television screens. But it's so crazy to think about that, like, one small decision. And if it didn't happen, it was like, cool, life is good. Like, I was about to get married, and I was going back to school. I was going to get, you know, probably a normal job, or maybe, I don't know. But I'm glad it happened, because music is everything that I thought it could have been for me. It makes me feel purposeful, and it makes me feel like I'm writing songs, and as crazy as this business is and all that, when I get on stage and I sing for however many people are there, it just all makes sense. And so I'm glad I followed my brother that day.
It's amazing. It sounds like you have a really healthy detachment, and certainly a humility around your music career that I would think even helps you defy genres a little bit, maybe even defy industry standards. And what I mean by that is, it's so refreshing when you meet an artist who is authentic, mm-hmm. and is doing, as you put it, what they were made to do. And it just feels right. There's nothing being forced. You're not trying to just write the next hit song. You're mm-hmm. allowing what you do as an artist to overflow from who you are. So I'm wondering, mm-hmm. as you've probably over and again had to kind of strike that balance, stand on that via media, that middle way to really live in the tension of, okay, well here I am. Like at one point I was sort of accidentally leading worship in college, and now I'm, you know, winning American Idol. Like obviously who you are as a Christian is imbued in mm-hmm. who you are as an artist. But I actually find it incredible and refreshing that it's not always at the forefront, that in fact you'll have an ability over and over again as an artist to first captivate people, engage them even in the most subtle of ways, and perhaps just get them asking the right questions that could one day lead them to faith.
Yeah. It's been something like the way that I go about faith and the way that I go about introducing faith into my music, whether it's introduced or not, or even at shows or in my personal relationship with people, it's always been a very, it's kind of like you said, it's been a very subtle thing. And I get encouraged by that in the way that I go about it, because a couple of the very first tours that I went on were with, I did a show with Switchfoot, and I did a show with a Green River Ordinance. They came out with me, and I love all those guys. They're awesome. But I remember Jamie from GRO. He came up to me during one show, and he was like, "Man, you have a light. Do not stop what you're doing." And I'm like, it felt like, okay, this makes sense. Well, you know, even if I worry about those things, or worry like, should I be mentioning Jesus in my songs, or should I be talking about God, or, you know, questioning the spirituality of the world in what I'm doing outwardly, when he came up to me and told me that, it was like, okay, I think I'm doing this in the right way. And at least for me, and that it, I think it's different for everybody. You know, I think everyone goes about their spirituality in a different way. And that there's nothing to say about, like, I know so many Christian artists that are in that, like, in that world and entrenched in that world, that have done an amazing job of speaking about their spirituality and being honest about it and being true to themselves. But the way that I go about it feels very true to myself. I don't have all the answers. I 100% know that. And I'm honest about that. But I am willing to tell people, like, hey, if they ask, are you a Christian or do you love, like, what do you believe in? And I'm willing to talk about that and have a conversation with people. That's even been with fans. I've had conversations with fans about those things, and I think that's been really eye-opening and really just, it's made a lot of sense, I think, in what I've done.
It's really cool too, because I think that's the origin of Love Good, really knowing about your music and rallying behind it in a way that only we can. And what I mean to say is, you know, when Paul Steele and I, you know, we brainstorm about once or twice a year about different projects that he has coming out, artists that he's working with that we want to be able to promote and distribute. you were right at the top of his list. You know, we had already done a lot with Drew and Ellie Holcomb, a little bit with Judah and the Lion. And I think what's got to be exciting, or at the very least consoling for you, is that you are in a community of other artists who are being called in a very similar way, but I would say a very unique way.
Yeah.
Perhaps one that would come with different challenges and different joys and different opportunities.
I think when you're kind of riding the line and you don't have like, okay, I'm on the right side or I'm on the left side, whichever side you want to call either one of those. But you're kind of riding in this middle line. There may not be as much, I say this in a very like worldly way, but there may not be as much success as, you know, you may not experience as much widely known success and, you know, the world knowing who you are. But it feels like the people that I know that are in this town and that are in this, I wouldn't even call it a circle because we're not all like meeting together all the time, but I do know a lot of these people and I feel like we're all trying to do it around kind of the same way and approach music in the same way and approach spirituality in the same way. And it's, I think it's refreshing.
Yeah.
I think so. And I think the people that hear it and the people that find it and the fans that listen to those, to my music or Drew's music or Ellie's music or Judah's music or GRO's music or Ben Rector or somebody like that, or, you know, there's a million people in this town. I think there's so many of us, you know, the fans that can grab onto that music. I think they feel that it means something. And it means something to them in their life, knowing that we're being very honest with our music as well and trying to just tell people how we feel about everything, you know, whether it be love or life or even sometimes spirituality, you know?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I'm doing a master's in theology right now online. Maybe unlike you, I've always loved school and just never found enough time even later in life to study. Like, I'm a total bookworm.
My wife's like that. Yeah,
it's cool. It's really cool. And one of the things that we learned like day one is that one of the reasons that theology is the queen of all the sciences is because it has the noblest subject matter, who's God himself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the only science that actually has something to say about everything. In other words, to love as God love as God loves, to know as God knows, to see all things through his vision. That's what it is to study theology. In the same way, artists who ride this line, who stand in this via media, will have something to say about everything. I love
think
that.
So. Yeah, I think we do. I mean, I think if people were to put us all in a panel or something like that, I think we would have a lot to say. I really do. I think we would all have our own like pieces to say about it. But I do think the biggest thing that comes out of all of that, and what I think the common denominator for even all of us as musicians, and because we get to see the world and because we get to see different cultures and all these things, it's just love, you know? Like, that is, I think that is the most common denominator that we all need, no matter what. And I believe me, it can be hard. but I think when we all look at our music and our lives and our families and everything and our fans, that's the only thing that makes sense in life. Is like this common love, and I believe that comes from God, personally.
Yeah, it's really awesome. And we talk a lot around Love Good about transforming the heart to love what is good. It's a bit of a play on our own words here. But, you know, the more we can love the highest good, you and I would both say that's God himself. The more we'll just have a captivating presence and an ability, without trying, to just transform people and to transform a larger culture that's really dying right now. One of the ways that you're doing that, quite specifically and right at this very moment, is your Christmas tour.
Yeah.
And I'm just so curious, where have you all been? There can't be too many more dates left on the road. And how have these nights been going so far?
This is a new endeavor for me. I came out with the Christmas record last year, as you know, and I didn't really get to tour on it. I didn't really get to play the songs live. So I knew that this year I was like, I want to do that. I want to get out and play these songs because I really like. It's kind of weirdly one of the my favorite things that I've put out. It was the easiest thing, and I kind of am infatuated with Christmas music, and I probably shouldn't be, but I love everything about it, and I love this time of year. It's fun for me. So actually, we've been a lot of places, kind of northeast and kind of the East Coast a little bit. Nashville tonight, and then we have two more shows after that. We're going to Tampa and then Atlanta. The show is different for me. I wanted to go about it a different way. I wanted to have some production elements to it, and I wanted to feel very inspired. So I actually found these old Christmas radio shows from the 40s and the 50s that I was listening to them during Thanksgiving this year. And they enamored me. I was so infatuated with them. And I got like 7 or 8 of them, and they're about an hour and a half long, and I'm just listening to them over and over and over and over again. And I'm finding these little pieces that I think I could use during the show. And it was the idea to me that people, like families and friends and just people hanging out with the people that they love, were sitting around something as small as a radio and just being together. I have this probably like, wrong view of what it actually would be, but it's very just, you know, everyone's sitting there and just listening and laughing at the things that are funny and crying at the things that are emotional. And so we actually have made a set almost, and it feels like a 1950s home, and it's really cool. I wanted that idea to be in the Christmas show, that we're just all here together having a good time, celebrating this time of year, and you know, people willing to have, you know, put their arm around their friend and sing a crazy Christmas carol or something like that, maybe laugh a little bit. There's a couple moments where I feel like I didn't know that people would cry, but I think some people have cried. Mm-hmm. Which is a win. That is a major win. If you can make people cry, you can make them come back, I think. So, it's been a blast. It's been a lot of fun. There's a lot of fun things that happened during the show.
It's awesome. Well, your love for this time of the year and your infatuation with Christmas music, as you put it, it comes across. This is one of the most fun new Christmas records I've listened to in a long, long time. And it's just high energy, but it's also really cool. And it
Thanks,
feels
man.
Very organic. Like, okay, yeah, this is something that I think only Chris Allen could have done, you know?
It's well, I appreciate very, very that. Cool. I got together with a good friend of mine who I've written a bunch with, and finally was like, hey, let's do something fun together. And his name is K.S. Rhodes, and he is one of the most talented people, I think, in this town. And we kind of got together with him and two other people, and the engineer, and we just kind of made the record in a day, or 2 days, 3 days, something like that. It was no time, and loved every minute of it. So fun.
It's really cool. Well, in just a few moments, we're going to have you back to hear kind of some of the music, books, even films that you've been enjoying lately, and get some of your media recommendations. Everybody, we're on the show today with Chris Allen. We're back with Jessamyn Anderson, and she's going to tell us this week, as always, how we can build a better culture. But before she does that, I want you to know that she turned down an offer to see one of the best Christmas movies that is out right now, The Man Who Invented Christmas, because she was late at night staying home doing something called Christmas crafting. I don't even know
okay,
what
that Jimmy,
is.
Okay, Jimmy, but you got a Christmas present out of it, am I right?
That's true.
So
a really
you're
nice,
welcome.
A really nice ornament. It's on the tree. Everybody loves it. So, okay, let's get into it, Jessamyn. What can we do this week to build a better culture?
Well, as we all know and talk about a lot, social media is a huge part of our everyday lives, but how can we use it in a positive way? So what I love about social media is interacting and engaging and getting to kind of quote unquote meet people that I'm not actually going to get to meet in person. So I want to meet you guys. I want to know what you're up to. I want to see the Love Good standard in action in your life, whether that's just a moment you see on the street, or you know, you hang it on your fridge of the PDF printout that we've got. I also want to know, like, do you have questions about how to build a better culture? Tag us, comment. We want to know. We want to hear from you. And that's what I love. My favorite, one of my favorite things about Love Good is that it's so community and relationship focused. But we can't do that without you guys. So we're on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook as our primary platforms. You can follow us at Love Good Culture or Facebook.com/Love Good Culture. Tag us, post on our page, ask us questions. We want to hear from you. We want to know how we can engage with you. So it's just really wonderful to see you guys and what you're up to. And we want to be a part of that. And we want you all to be a part of what we're doing. We've got some crazy behind the scenes stuff that happens on our end that we are just excited to share with you guys, to let you in on kind of what we do day to day.
It's awesome. You know, we just had a massive Christmas party here last
night. Oh, so fun.
Yeah, like I'm thinking it approached around 100 people at one point, and it was really, really awesome. In some ways, I felt like this night kind of embodies Love Good, you know, such a beautiful community of young people and artists and families and so many others who came out.
I mean, the Christmas caroling alone was like one for the books, right?
Agreed, agreed. And one of the things I constantly underestimate is the power of community, even online. I mean, obviously, there's nowhere where we need it more importantly than in our real day-to-day lives, but also through social media, we can continue to bridge the gap and stand in the gap and be a part of one another's lives, even at a distance. So, Jessamyn, thanks. I need that reminder. I am sometimes so hesitant to hop on even my own home feeds. And we got a lot of beautiful people out there doing incredible things, living the Love Good standard themselves. And we just want to be a part of that. So thanks for the reminder.
You're welcome. And have a very Merry Christmas, everyone.
We're back with Chris Allen. We're closing out our interview today with an American Idol finalist, a man of great talent, a man who also has just got an incredible story, an upbringing from Arkansas, and even now a man of great faith, a man who loves his family, a man who is bringing a real depth and authenticity into his art and into his craft. And so much of that, like anybody who's an artist, it has to do with your influences and some of the music that you're listening to, books that you're reading, films that you've seen recently. So I'm curious, Chris, what are some of the influences or even just the kind of things that you've been enjoying lately that you know shape you as a man and shape you as an artist?
Yeah, so I'm always trying to get into new things, whether it be, you know, a new you know, a documentary or a book or music or something like that. I just watched the Jim Carrey documentary that was on Netflix, and it was really great. I think he's got a lot of great things to say. So go check that out. A friend of mine told me a long time ago to check out Louis L'Amour, who is an amazing old Western author. And so those are the same thing, right? Oh, wow. And so I finally I was at the library the other day. Yes, I go to the library. I love going to the library. And I found a Louis L'Amour book called Shalico that's really good. I'm almost done with it. And hopefully he's got hundreds of these old Western books, and they're really cool. Mm-hmm. So I've been checking that out. As far as music goes, I'm definitely in the Christmas mindset. So I've been listening to a lot of old Christmas tunes and some like Norah Jones stuff as well. I think she does a lot of great Christmas stuff. My buddy John McLaughlin just put out a great Christmas record. I think it's an EP, and it's really great. He's so talented, and I think he's out on the road too. Those are a lot of stuff. You know, there's a lot of great music out there. Especially in this town, it's insane.
That's right. Yeah. We're really spoiled. And, you know, we've got listeners to this podcast on at least three continents that we're aware of. And what we might take for granted is some of the quality and even quantity of great music in our town. It doesn't always get out far beyond. And so it's really, really cool that you've been a part of that today. We've really enjoyed this conversation. I certainly have. It's been an absolute privilege, Chris.
Thank you.
For the crazy people out there who aren't already following you on social media or perhaps haven't stumbled across your website, how can people stay in touch with you?
Yeah, you can follow me on social media. Instagram is Chris_Allen. Chris Allen is not me. It is actually a Katy Perry impersonator who I've actually met, and she's very sweet. Yeah, right. It's pretty funny. Facebook, you can just look at my name. But my website is chrisallenofficial.com if you want to keep up with show dates and things like that. And we put some fun things on there. And you can sign up for the email list. There's always fun stuff that we give out on there, whether it be new music that's exclusive to that. So, yeah, I think those are the main things. Twitter, Chris Allen.
It's awesome.
With just a K. It's always with a K.
K-R-I-S. K-R-I-S-A-L-L-E-N. So everybody check it out. ChrisAllenOfficial.com. All of his social media. Chris, it's been an absolute joy to have you in the studio today. We'll do this again sometime.
Yeah, I would love to, man. Thank you so much. But I still made my Christmas list. And this is all it says. That all I really want this year all we really need this year is peace and happiness.
You're listening to Peace and Happiness off of the brand new Christmas album by Chris Allen. Wow, what a joy to have had him in the studio just now to talk about so many different things, about what it really means to pursue this middle ground, to ride this line even as an artist in the midst of so many pressures across the industry and across culture. And here he is in Nashville, Tennessee, doing beautiful things to transform that culture by just being himself, by really being humble and being authentic and obviously allowing his giftedness to just be on display more than anything for the glory of God. So what a joy. Thank you again, Chris, for coming in. This is actually our last episode of 2017. And y'all, it has been an absolutely beautiful ride up until this point. We've just enjoyed every one of these conversations and interviews and call-ins and moments where we've been able to really uncover some of these great, beautiful, and kind of deep mysteries of life and what it means to be human. This is usually that time in the show where we have a listener call-in or a listener who sends us an audio recording or a voice memo. But I've decided, because we've got a few weeks until our next episode, to read a testimonial actually from one of our patrons out there. This is Andy and Michelle Dalbum. This is a beautiful blog that we released not too long ago. I want to just read a brief excerpt from it. And they really unpack why they support Love Good, why they're patrons, why they're behind our movement. And perhaps that'll inspire many of you and yours to become patrons this Christmas and holiday season as well. Again, this is Michelle and Andy Dalbum writing from Wichita, Kansas. It wasn't until we became parents, and parents of an absolute sponge at that, that we started realizing that the message of the music we were listening to mattered. When we had to start explaining the lyrics to our very inquisitive 3-year-old son, we realized that the values that we hoped to pass on to him and the values that he was absorbing through the music we were listening to were really quite opposed to each other. At that point, the only viable alternative was contemporary Christian music. And so we listened to that for a few years because it was at least safe. But for its safety, it was also disappointing because it didn't really help us explore the depths of being human. It was about that time that we got an email from Jimmy Mitchell pitching this vision of artists transforming culture through music. It was an answer to prayer, a cause we had only dreamed could exist, and one we knew we had to support. When we started receiving music from the movement, we were hooked. Here, finally, were artists grappling with the realities of living life in a fallen world, but grappling with the underlying understanding that how we live matters. No longer did we have to worry about questionable lyrics, not because the music was safe, but because it was written by people exploring the whole of the human experience in the same way that we were, with the belief that how we approach every situation in our life should be shaped by our faith. Here were values we were comfortable letting settle into our kids' souls. Here was beautifully written and masterfully performed music of every genre, speaking truth. Through Love Good, we discover music that sparks questions and meaningful conversations with our children, art that pierces our hearts, and words that feed our souls. Again, that was a little testimonial from Michelle and Andy Dalbum all the way in Wichita, Kansas. They're some of our founding patrons. They've been with us from day one. They've hosted many house concerts and been hugely supportive every step of the way. So As always, a shout out to Michelle and Andy and all of our patrons out there who make this podcast possible. These last several episodes to inaugurate season one have been an absolute joy, only made possible by those patrons. If you're interested, go check it out, lovegoodculture.com/join. And in fact, I'm going to go ahead and give you a little clue. For a little while longer, we're extending that coupon. The only people who know about this are you, our podcast listeners. So if you type in Deck the Halls at checkout, as you become a patron of Love Good, you'll actually get the first month free, a massive bundle of music, books, t-shirt, all of that delivered as soon as possible. May or may not be there by Christmas, depending on when you become a patron, but know that we'll send it out as quickly as we can, and we'll just be more grateful than ever before as our movement continues to grow and we can do more and more to invest in young people and artists who are really doing something beautiful with their lives and building a better culture. As always, it's been an absolute pleasure. We'll see you guys in a few weeks after the New Year's, and know that we're praying for you and your families this Christmas season. God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to the Love Good Podcast. Tell your friends all about us. Stay in touch on social media, and be sure to stop by iTunes or Stitcher to give us a review. Massive thanks to all of our patrons who make this podcast possible. On top of being a media discovery platform and crowdfunding initiative, we are a grassroots movement that accompanies young people and artists who are transforming culture with beauty. Our patrons are on the front lines of discovering the world's best new music, books, and art before anyone else. Build the culture you've always imagined. Join the movement and become a patron today at lovegoodculture.com.